Hey, welcome back, gardeners. Another, going to be a lovely day outside. It's always a lovely day outside unless it's 4 degrees. That's not so lovely. Everyone is panicking over the cold weather. That's something where we should take a deep breath. And as Douglas Adams said, don't panic. Yes, there is damage out there from the cold. No, you can't accurately assess it 2 days after we come out of the freezing. Many of those plants could take as long as a month to either show you the total damage or to recover from the damage, because a lot of them look dead, but they're just mostly dead, okay? We have to give them some time to show whether or not they'll recover. Don't just walk out there and assume that plant's dead, I'm yanking it out of the ground because the leaves are brown on it. I've got three xylosmas. I had 5 gallon xylosmas. They were about 36 inches tall. I put them in the ground about 90 days ago, so they really took a pretty good hit in this cold weather. They were completely covered with snow to the point that all the branches had bent over that I couldn't find them. Snow had drifted up around them, and of course the cold temperatures. Then some of the snow melted and we got cold again to really freeze them. Yesterday, the snow was pretty much gone and they looked pretty pathetic. I look at them this morning after yesterday's peak of sun and warmer weather. They're all standing upright. They were flat, literally, on the ground. They're all standing upright right now. Their leaves are brown. And I go out and look, and they have new buds to replace those leaves. They're just going to drop them off and put on new green growth, and they'll be fine. That's why we have to give everything time. It doesn't matter which plants you want to go through a list on. It is too soon to accurately assess the damage caused to your plants. The other part of it is, part of the factor is, what are the conditions on your piece of ground? What are the conditions like where you planted this plant? Maybe the tree that's nearby or the other shrubs actually acted as a break where the temperatures for your plant really didn't get as cold as the thermometer said, or possibly got much worse. Maybe your soil is really terrible and the plant has not really been able to establish itself, even if it's been there for years. Or maybe your soil is so special and good by the way you've taken care of it that this plant couldn't find a happier place to grow. There are way, way too many factors to take into account than to simply step outside and go, that plant's brown, it's dead, because we don't know yet. We must be patient. You want to go out and clean up stuff? Them leaves look brown, you got fronds on your palm or your sago or whatever, go ahead. But don't assume the plant's dead. Give it an opportunity to recover. Now, there's always a fair assessment here. I know the plant's not dead, but to trim it up and cut off all the dead and remove that, because we should be looking at that long term, not just today, but we should remove dead, that when I get done, this plant is going to look so pathetic. And it's a slow grower, so it's going to take it a whole year or longer to return to being a decent looking plant in my landscape. You know, if you want to give up on it, that's okay too. Take the plant out as soon as the nurseries get in stock, as soon as they open back up, put a new one in. Or consider changing your landscape for a different plant. But don't just walk out there and go, that plant has all brown leaves, it's dead or it's dying, I need to get rid of it. So take that into account, a little bit of patience, etc. and don't really get too excited that your plants don't look good yet. They're not going to. We need sunshine, we need warmer temperatures, and both are on their way. Let's go to the phone. This is Bob. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, Jeff. I've got, I live out in the country. I've got a lot of damaged trees. They're broke off pretty high. Can I leave them, or do I need to get an arborist to come out and give me a clean cut?
Okay. If you think about it, if we had an unmaintained stand of trees, a forest, well, big fancy word there, right? Natural weather patterns, whether it's cold and ice that break it or winds and storms that break it, those branches will break, and there's no one there to maintain them for them. There's no little gnome arborist that runs out in the middle of the night. So if you don't want to deal with them because there's so many, or they're out of reach or things like that, you stand the risk of natural selection. Nature does this to trees all the time. We don't always get to them in time to be able to clean them up, to cut them, to fix the wound on the tree, but the trees still grow. So I kind of leave it up to you. You're not, if you're going to call an arborist to have them come and take that out or clean it up for you, that would be a better health act for those trees than to just leave them. But if there's such a stand of trees where you're going, I can't afford to get all of these cut, or you don't have the tools to do it, or, you know, you don't want to call an arborist or a trim company to come out and take care of it for you, odds are the trees are probably going to survive just fine. They're just going to have a lot more character to them. You would reduce the risk of damage and disease and things like that if you could get them trimmed up. But we got plenty of forests with trees with lots of broken branches in them, and they're big, healthy trees yet. So weigh out what it's going to cost to you and what the value of those trees are. Of course, it would be best if you could get them cut. But if there's so many, just pick the ones that are really special to you, and don't assume the other ones are instantly going to be victims and not make it. They should continue to grow, and over time that branch will become a runway for squirrels, or will become fall off and somebody will come and collect it for firewood. It's up to you when it's not a single tree in your landscape. When it's a whole stand of them, and if you want to take care of them, that's great. But if it is overwhelming for cost or time, those trees will probably still survive just fine.
Thank you. You have time for one more question?
Yeah, quick one, Bob.
I put corn gluten down about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Do I need to do it again after the storm, or am I still okay?
I think you're still going to be okay because the cold weather stops both the decomposition process of the corn gluten, and we'll start again when we get a little warmer temperature, and it stopped the seed germination. So you've got kind of a natural pause there. There would be no harm in putting more down, of course, but I think you're going to be okay and see that when we get a little warmer, the corn gluten is going to start breaking down again. It's going to start doing its job again, and I think you'll get the rest of your value out of it. More is not a bad idea, other than it kind of puts a hurt on your wallet.
How long would I wait?
You know, you could probably do it next weekend to make sure that we get a nice drying out of the soil and pretty standard temperatures and things like that. You could do it next weekend if you wanted.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Folks, we're up against a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Let's go to the phone. This is Matt. Good morning, Matt. What can I help you with?
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call. I had a non-storm related question for you.
Yes, sir.
So we moved in last March to a new construction, and my trees, they seem to be able to bounce back from the storm just fine. So thanks for your words this weekend. But I don't know how to take care of them, when I'm supposed to take down the I think they're called tie-downs, or if I'm supposed to move those. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. If you have a state tree, you first off, they really shouldn't stake trees unless the one they put in is so big that the canopy has the is much bigger than the root ball. Those tend to get blown over in a breeze real easily, so they should stake the tree. Number two, the stake should the binding holding it to the stakes, you should always be able to put your fingers inside that binding. You're not trying to strangle the tree. So those, you really want to check that first. It should not be a tight wrap against the tree. It should be loose enough that you can put your fingers in there. Usually it will depend on the tree. And what you can do is grab the trunk and wiggle it a little.
Right.
A year's worth of staking is usually enough to be able to remove the stakes. This is all predicated on, you know, how big a tree, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
So if it's been there about a year and you grab the trunk and you wiggle it back and forth and you see that it's really not going anywhere and the root ball's got a good connection to the soil, you can probably remove the stakes. Now, okay. You want to leave them for a while, that's fine. Just make sure they're not strangling the tree.
Yeah, since they're young, they are kind of drooping now from the weight of the ice. Are they going to?
Yes.
Do you think they'll straighten back up, or should I hold them back a little bit?
No, you shouldn't have to do any work. All of my trees look like shepherd's hooks this week. They were drooping from the top, and they were bent over in half, and things like that.
Yep.
I look out this morning, and I only have one that's still doing that, and nowhere near as bad as it was earlier. You should see these things straighten themselves up with some sunshine and warmer temperatures in a little bit of time. So you shouldn't have to do anything to make them better.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Now,
appreciate it. Yep,
care for them. You got a question here about caring for them, Matt?
For
the first year at least. If not the first 2 years, you're its lifeblood for water. In 100-degree temperatures, you may be watering it once a week, once every 10 days.
Mm.
In this cooler weather, when we get rain, you probably don't have to water them at all. But when we get to this summer to really get it to establish, water at the edge of the root ball and out, not closer to the trunk. You want to water in such a way that 24 hours after you turn that water off, you can feel moisture, say, 5 or 6 inches deep with your fingers. Now, this is going to be an issue when it's 100. It's a lot less of an issue in the spring when we're getting rain. They're not so stressed. It's not so hot. But if you can do that, at least this summer, you will have a really well-established tree, and it should fall into the pattern that it can live on what falls from the sky.
Gotcha. Okay. I will do that for sure.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call, Matt. Let's go to, we have time. Let's go to Chris. Good morning, Chris. What can I help you with?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
We live in the hill country about an hour north of Austin, and we have a peach tree that's probably about 8 years old, and it's always been a really good producer. And we typically have pruned it mid-February, but I'm wondering what we should do this year.
You know, it would be okay to prune it now, Chris. The pruning is necessary to keep the tree strong and healthy. You can prune it even up to when the buds are starting to open. It will be okay if you do it, even if the buds are opening. But you're in a fine period of time now. If you have the time and the tools and you're ready to do it today, you could do it today. If you want to wait a week or two so that you're not so cold outside while you're doing this, that would be fine too. You'd like to get it pruned before too many of the buds open, if that helps at all. So if you've got the time, it's a good window to do it now. If you'd like to wait a little longer, you'd like to get the pruning done before you get way too many flowers open. But you can actually prune it as flowers are showing up. So don't worry about it too much.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
Thanks for the call, Chris. For those of you talking about pruning trees, that is a really good question. I have not pruned my pear yet, and I have a bunch of water spouts to get out of it. I went out yesterday and checked the buds on it. They hadn't opened. They were still tender. It looks like they will be okay this year. I have not pruned my plums yet or cut them back severely like you're supposed to. It's okay. I have no open buds on it. Even if it was starting to flower, you can still prune them for that winter, quote, winter pruning to get the shape. Remember, for best production, fruit trees are generally pruned. Apple, peach, pear, and plum. I prune my fig only because it keeps growing in places I don't want it to grow. It beats on my roof. It beats against my house. I prune that. Persimmons, only to shape them. Pomegranates, only to pull out dead wood. But it is an okay time to do that right now if you wish. You will not harm the tree. I'm just going to wait till it's a little warmer because I don't like being out in the cold. Yeah, that's just me. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. We're going to have to take a break for the news. You can give me a call. The number is 512-836-0590. We'll catch you on the other side. Welcome back, everybody. Hey, I got a text message, a good one. And it's, of course, going to be an answer that takes more than just a couple words. You want to start a compost pile. Compost is the simplest recipe there is. You need four things. You need organic, dry, brown material. That's a high carbon source. That's things like dried leaves, shredded paper, cut grass that has dried out, straw, hay, things like that. You need an organic source of nitrogen. Kitchen scraps, green grass, coffee grounds, some of those kind of things. And when I say organic, I don't mean the little green label you get at the grocery store. I mean as organic. They used to be living things at one point, and they're no longer alive. You need water because the biology that's going to go to town to break everything down for you and turn it into something better, it's alive. It needs water. Now, we have a little problem with the water because you've got to be careful. Too much water will make your compost pile smell really bad. So be prepared for that. Too little water and stuff won't break down because that biology doesn't get enough water. It can't multiply. You also need oxygen because that biology needs to breathe just like us. So if you have those four things in the correct ratio, your compost material will break down into what we're hoping for, humus, that great stuff that we add to the soil that conditions it and gives it the texture we want and makes it that happy place for plants to grow. There are things you do not add to your compost pile. Dairy, oils, like cooking oils, and meat. Not because they won't break down, but in the backyard garden, our compost pile doesn't get hot enough fast enough. So if you throw meat or dairy products in there or cooking oils, they're going to smell. and they're going to draw in maggots and all kinds of other bad things, and we don't want to deal with that. But everything else can wind up in there. But we have to talk about straw and hay and animal manure. There's some problems here. Many, not all, places that grow hay or straw, there's an herbicide they can spray on it that will kill the weeds, but not the hay material. That makes for a better quality hay, because you don't want a bunch of weeds. And some of those weeds can be dangerous to the animals you're feeding. So you want clean hay for your animals. But the problem is the herbicide they use is so powerful that it's still active on hay, even if the hay bale was baled, you know, a couple of months ago. The problem is that if an animal eats the hay, that herbicide is still in its manure. Comes right through the animal. So it is a risk when you have hay and when you have animal manure, excuse me, ruminant animal manure, grass eaters, like horses and pigs and cows and sheep and goats. That herbicide is still active in their manure. That herbicide is still in that hay. And even if you compost it, it can still be there. So what's the big deal? That herbicide kills broadleaf weeds. Many of the plants in our garden are broadleaf. They're not a weed because we intentionally plant them. That's the only difference between a weed and a plant. A weed is something growing where you don't want it to. A plant is something where we intentionally go, we want that to grow there. So things like tomatoes and peppers, potatoes, those plants are easily susceptible to be damaged by an herbicide, and there's no recovery. It's not like you pour something on your compost or on your garden bed and zappo, that chemical's all gone. So, yes, you can use hay and straw as part of that brown material to make your compost pile. Sweepings, like stall sweepings from horses or the hay around the feeder that the cows didn't eat. You know, there's always that material. That's good stuff. The animal manure, that's really good source of nitrogen so that you get that carbon and nitrogen, some water, some oxygen. You're making really good compost. And it's getting nice and hot. But if you cannot be sure of the source of the straw or hay, if you can't be positive that it was never sprayed with that material, if you get animal manures and you cannot be guaranteed that those animals didn't eat hay or straw that had that herbicide on it, you have a risk. That risk has been getting smaller lately, but that risk is still here. The info desk at the Natural Gardener, every year, someone would come in and the diagnosis is kind of obvious, and getting to talk to them, we see they shoveled up some manure from a friend's horse. They put it in their garden. There's nothing you can do about it. Now, to make you even angrier if this happens, the half-life of this chemical can be over 500 days. So meaning when it comes out of the sprayer, it's 500 days before it's only half as strong. It could take forever to finally mitigate its way out of your garden if you inadvertently get it in your garden. So, man, we need to process these animal manures. They're rich in resources. And the use of hay is a renewable resource that we can really add to build up our soils. And that's something that we really need to do. Soils can hold a ton of carbon. And a good, healthy soil, of course, increases crop yield. And there's, you know, that's a good thing. Being short of food, I think a lot of people this weekend are actually experiencing what it's like to be short of food. but that risk from that herbicide is there. If you take it, if you take that risk, it's best if you can really know the people you got it from and can trust them when they tell you, no, we didn't use this herbicide. Or, no, I know that my animals did not get fed hay that had this herbicide. Because it's really frustrating when you've gone to the work to make this fantastic compost from these really good resources, and you add them to your garden with the intent of it being really productive, and you find out that the plants you put in there die or don't grow very well. I wish I could tell you what the actual percentage risk is. We don't have that number. But like I said, every year we encounter folks whose gardens have been contaminated because of this. And there's no easy solution other than time to allow the chemical to break down. So you need brown stuff, you need organic brown stuff, you need organic green stuff, you need water, you need oxygen. There's lots of other sources other than ruminant manures, grass-eating manures, rather than hay or straw. Chicken manure is fantastic, and chickens don't eat this chemical. Now you get into the question, but chickens eat medicated feed. Does that wind up in the compost? Totally different argument, and not an easy answer on that one either. So can you use animal manure? Can you use hay or straw? Yes, but understand you're assuming some risk with it. Sorry that I'm not full of happy news with that, but I'd rather you be informed and you make an informed choice. Folks, we're up against our last break for the hour. This is Gardening Naturally. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. We're in the lightning round. I'm going to try to get a ton of information in here in a hurry. First off, when I mentioned you can't use cooking oils in a compost pile, no cooking oil, whether it's straight out of the bottle or you've already used it. The oil will go rancid on you, and that's a lovely scent to encounter because it won't be broken down fast enough. It'll be exposed to a ton of oxygen, which it isn't in the bottle, and the temperature swings, especially when it gets warm. No cooking oil, period. We don't have the ability in the average backyard garden to maintain a 140 to 160 degree compost pile that would break it down. So it doesn't matter whether it's used or fresh out of the bottle. Please don't add cooking oils. You will regret the scent of it. When would you trim olive trees? You could probably start trimming them up right now. And one advantage is if I'm trimming them now, I'm not cutting off any buds yet because they're going to form a little later in the spring for the flower and possible fruit. Or you can prune them after a harvest because you won't lose any fruit that way. Our olives probably took a beating. Even the Arbequina, which should be good to 15, is probably not happy. I'm pretty sure I'm going to write off the two olives I have. They weren't very cold hardy in the first place, but I'm going to wait a month to find out because it's going to take that long before I know if there is actual damage. Let's go to the phone. This is Janet. Good morning, Janet. What can I help you with?
Yes, Jeff. Good morning. Okay. The focal point of my front yard is a Mexican fan palm, and it's one of the smaller ones. Like my, I'm in a little cottage in a condominium area, and it was in front of the windows, the main windows, and it's not up to the roof, and it's like 5 years old. Now, all of the stems that are out, I mean, they're damaged. What's going to happen to that? If I trim all of them off, it's just going to come up at the top, come out at the very top?
Yes. It's going to put on its new growth through the central axis of the plant. You're going to see these new palms come out from the top of the plant. So basically, it's going to have this wild kind of troll-like haircut to it when it finally starts reproducing. Here's the bad news. If you can reach it for the next however long it takes for you to decide, you want to go out there every couple of days and peek into that center core and look for new green growth to start showing up. Buy the book. A Mexican fan palm gets real unhappy at 15. Okay. And we got well into single digits.
Right.
Hold out some hope. It may have been somewhat protected. The way the wind blew, all of those factors could still come into play. But you want to check that center crown. And it's okay to trim off those leaves now just so it doesn't look like this dead palm tree.
Okay, what if I cut it in half? I mean, cut it down to where I wanted. Like, if it just comes up at the top, that's going to look weird in front of, well, it's not going to look right. What if I cut
part of the
off,
problem
like,
is that you need to wait to see if it recovers at all.
Okay.
So I would let it come out at the top, and if I start getting leaves there, then there's a discussion about, I know it's alive, I know it's coming back, will it survive if I cut it in half and it produce new shoots from a lower height? I know some palms can manage that, but you first want to make sure it's alive.
Right.
So give it an opportunity to show you some green and then consider that conversation again later.
Okay.
If you lost it, a Mexican fan palm can get 100 feet tall. Yes, they have not so tall varieties of it. If you lost it, you may want to have a conversation with your local nursery about, I want that look,
yeah,
but I don't need a 100-foot tall version of it, and see if they don't have cold, hardy, lower-growing ones for you.
Okay. Okay, and real quick, my oleander, I think it's going to be fine. It stood up again, but will I cut that back eventually for new, or will the leaves just fall off and I get new leaves on those limbs?
They're not quite as cold tolerant as they should be for us to plant them, although the cold we got is so rare. I would wait, let it recover a little bit, and you're probably going to spend time cutting out dead and frozen branch parts. If I see a branch and it's got a bunch of dead leaves on it, and it suddenly produces, or you can see new buds on that branch, those leaves will probably be replaced.
Okay.
If I grab a branch and I try to bend it and it's supple, it'll probably replace leaves. If I bend the branch and it snaps, that's a dead branch. In a couple of weeks or so, I might cut out all the dead because it should be more obvious to you what is dead on the plant. And you can neaten it up. You can trim it up so it looks better. And it should produce new growth because you trimmed it. But there's no exact answer that
you're
going to know
just,
today.
Just
you need to let
you're
it
great.
Have an opportunity.
You know a lot, and thank you.
Thanks for the call, Janet. Yeah, folks, it can get hard to determine, but have some faith in your plants. Give them an opportunity to recover. If you want to go out there and you just can't constrain yourself and you're concerned about the damage, check your trees first. A big, heavy tree branch, you don't want falling on someone or something. So check your trees first for heavily broken branches. Everything else, go out and make an observation and see how it looks, but put your pruners away, put your shovels away. You got to give the plants a little opportunity to show you whether or not they're going to recover. If you're starting to pull stuff today, you're pulling out stuff that may have made it and would look great this summer for you. Folks, this has been Gardening Naturally. I'll be back next Saturday at 9. Thank you as I start year number 3 of hosting. And hang on, Cheryl's up next. She's going to have a conversation, too, about the cold damage in our native plants. And I hope she's promoting the patients also. See you next week.